I would like to introduce our first speaker on the topic of hope and faith. His name is Greg S. from Shelter Rock Live Group in Nassau area of Narcotics Anonymous.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Greg, and I am an addict.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, everybody. Thank you.
Oh, you muted the speaker, too.
How's that? I'm going to start all over. My name is Greg, and I am an addict. I want to thank the group, especially Alex, for asking me to share today. It's a beautiful thing. You know, we can sit on meetings all day. These Zoom meetings allow us to, you know, meet people from all over the country, all over the world for that matter. You know, I recently was getting a little burnt out from Zoom meetings, but I did a lot of things that I didn't want to do to stay high. So I'm doing a lot of things that might be uncomfortable to stay clean. That's kind of the way that I'm approaching this, but, I'm nervous, man. I'll be completely honest with you guys. I've never spoken at a convention before. You know, Alex told me that it's 30 minutes. And, last night when I heard that, I started writing out like notes and putting them up in my office. I look like the Beautiful Mind blackboard almost back here. And I was talking to my sponsor this morning. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, it's a simple program and you're complicating it, you know? And he was 100% right. You know, he's like, you have faith, you have hope in your life now. Talk about that. And, you know, touch upon, you know, inactive addiction where you had none of that in your life. So, you know, that's exactly what I'm going to do. You know, the nerves come from, and it's funny, in our literature, it talks about the addict mentality of having a combination of both of a high ego and low self-esteem. And both of those are pulling on me right now. I'll be honest with you. You know, I want to have a message that people are like, Greg was amazing. You know, that's my ego speaking, you know, but then there's the low self-esteem where I'm never going to be good as the last speaker. I'm not going to carry a message. You're going to hate me, you know? And that's the way I lived in active addiction, you know. Today, I try to replace the high ego with humility and, you know, the low self-esteem with pride. And there's a fine balance between the two, but I'll be honest with you, both of those are pulling on me right now. So, yeah, faith and hope is a great topic. I'm going to walk you through a little bit of my life during active addiction and emphasize how I had no faith in life, faith and hope in my life. And then I want to touch upon, when I hear faith and hope, I think about the second and third step, you know, believing in a higher power and then turning it over in the third step being one of my favorite steps. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm only up to my fourth step. I'm 3.5 years, June 6, 2017 is my clean date. I'm literally doing one step a year and that used to bother me, but now I realize I am living the steps organically. And I am on a path. It doesn't matter how fast the path is going, as long as it's going in the right direction. I'm working on my fourth step now. So then when I started thinking about the second and third step, I said it makes perfect sense because I feel comfortable talking about steps that I've actually worked. You know, I threw out all those notes because that's absolutely crazy. So I might be all over the place. I try to be cohesive. I hope you guys get something from it. And we'll take it from there. A little bit about my life. I grew up in Long Island, New York in a middle-class family as the youngest of three. And, it was a very religious family, a very Catholic family. I went to Catholic school my whole entire life. I was an altar boy, which was a lot of fun, let me tell you. I went to Catholic high school. I went to Catholic college and my family was very quote unquote religious, but they weren't really spiritual. You know, through the program, I'm finding that religious people follow the messenger and spiritual people follow the message. And that's the way I've been trying to live my life recently. I was young, you know, and I'll touch upon where I lost hope and where I lost faith. You know, growing up, I grew up with a family where there was very little unconditional love. Everything had to be a certain way. Everything had to have a certain image on the outside. And it really didn't give a crap. I'm from New York. I might curse. I apologize. The shit about feelings. And that wears on a child when you're growing up. You know, I wanted to, in high school, I was more of the artsy type. you know? But it was told to me that I needed to go a certain direction. I needed to do a certain thing. I need to play basketball. I'm horrible at basketball. I'm slow. I can't dunk. And I love the sport. I love to watch college hoops. Don't get me wrong. But, it is what it is. And I started to lose hope at an early age because I felt like I really had no decisions in life. And I know my parents wanted, I realize this now, of course, there's a resentment when I was younger, but they just wanted the best for me, you know, nothing against them. That's the way they were raised and they were trying to pass those qualities on to me. But, that hope was just, lost. Faith. I had very little faith being in a religious family. I didn't get it. I didn't understand the hypocrisy that was involved with the structure of a religion. When I was 14 years old, I was molested. And that really crushed a lot of faith that I had in other people. I tucked that memory neatly away. And I remember shortly after that drinking vodka by myself in a bedroom. And I didn't understand why, you know, because I was taught to hide feelings. I was taught not to talk about anything. And that was me drinking was a symptom of me hiding those feelings. And those feelings stuck with me until I got clean 20 years later. But in looking back, I used to disrespect women. I used to womanize. I used to, you know, try and date as many women as possible. And when I stopped going to the bars, that parlayed itself into a nice pornography addiction, which wears on the soul after a while as well. So all these things are connected, you know, and I didn't see that until I got clean. So fast forward, graduated from college and like promised, I got the great job. I was living in Manhattan. I was making a killer salary, but there was always that escapism, you know, there was always that lack of faith in anybody else. And essentially I became my own higher power, which is sad, you know, when I get into trouble, I'd say, I got myself into this trouble. I can get myself out. And in the beginning, that worked. You know, I was a crafty motherfucker. You know, I think we all were crafty motherfuckers. But, you know, over time, as the drugs got harder and harder, it's crazy, absolutely crazy. I'm not going to go into war stories. I could safely say that cocaine ripped out my soul. And heroin flushed it down the toilet, and NA was the plumber to help me find it out. NA really held up a mirror to see what was going on in my life. So, you know, I was working in the city, and things were progressing. You know, I was my own island. Nobody could touch me, you know. I was very closed off with relationships. I was in a codependent marriage. All we did was use together. When the money ran out, we looked at each other and said, what are we doing, you know? So we got divorced after a year and a half. But I started doing things I wouldn't do to stay high, you know? It was like drawing a line in the sand, and then I'd erase it, and I'd draw another line, and I erased it, and I'd draw another line. And the next thing you know, I was dipping my toes into the water and going further and further out. And, next thing I know, I was in the middle of the ocean with no help, no side of the shoreline, no life jacket, by myself, just trying to survive. I like to always include my last day of using whenever I share. It helps me remind me of where I was at that time. So I'd gone from having this great job in the city to being unemployable. I was bouncing around from job to job. I was only looking to get a paycheck so that I could remain high. I was married 2 years already. My wife knew something was up because I was creating fake accounts. I was pawning stuff around the house. I was stealing money. I was stealing things from my parents, all to stay high. So I went into the city one day with my unemployment check because that's all the money I had, and I was going to spend it on drugs and figure out the lie I was going to tell my wife afterwards. And I did my drugs, and I was driving back out to Long Island, and I crashed my car. I flipped it right before the 59th Street Bridge. I had no hope, no faith in my life at that period. I didn't know what to do. The only hope I actually had was that my wife would not find out, and that as I was handcuffed to the hospital bed, that I had hopes of getting out of the hospital in time to go pick up my daughter from daycare. hopes of getting out of the hospital without my wife finding out. That was the only hope I had. The only hope I had was, how am I going to get more money to continue to get high? So after that, I came home and there was something inside of me that told me my life had to change. It wasn't a spiritual intervention. It wasn't a faith, inserted intervention, but I decided to go out to treatment, in Arizona for 90 days. And, that's when I first heard the message of Narcotics Anonymous. And I remember they were coming in for AA meetings, which I knew what AA was, but when NA came in, I literally had to ask what NA stood for. And that's why I value my H&I commitment so much today, because I love passing on the message to somebody who may not have heard of NA before. So the second step, we believe a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. I'll talk a little bit about the second step. And in the Green Gold book, they talk about coincidences that had happened in your life, on how to come to believe that there might be a power higher than yourself. They also talk about listening. I don't know if you've read the Green Gold book, but it's fantastic. How do we believe, or how do we come to believe that there's a power greater than, ourselves? I was all by myself for 20 years. Inside my head, I was all by myself. So how am I going to come to believe that there is a power? And it talks about listening. And when I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, man, I didn't want to listen to anybody. I thought I knew what was going to happen. I thought I knew what the program was all about. I read the Blue Book in 3 days, and I was like, this is it. I got it. It's all upstairs. I didn't realize it was a living program, because I was self-centered. I was egotistical. I would look down on other people and say, how can you let your life get so bad? Even though I just went through this emotional... It's funny. You ever see that show Intervention? We all know the show Intervention. I used to think I found some sort of crazy loophole in my usage. So on the show Intervention, the first half of the show, they show people's lives in distress. And then the second half of the show is where the hope and the faith comes in. And they usually, most of the time, get recovery and they do an intervention. I used to shut the TV off after the first 30 minutes because it made me feel better about myself. Like, I'm not that bad. I'm not homeless. I'm not shooting up, I'm snorting everything that comes across the table, but I'm not like them, And that was my mentality, that was my mentality when I was out there and using. So, all right, so let's go back to me coming into the rooms and being very self-centered and not being able to listen. Somebody literally told me, I think I had 7 or 8 months clean, and I was sharing every chance that I can get. And I was coming up with stories to sound good. I was lying about my drug stories and my war stories. And I remember somebody told me at a day meeting that you should probably just shut up and listen. Very old school person. And that's probably the best advice I could have gotten. Because when you listen, you could hear people with experience talking about how God intervened in their life and how they believe in God and how they recover. And I started to absorb some of those, some of those pieces of knowledge and story. And, I began to experience those coincidences in my own life. When I was in rehab, I think one of the first times I kind of felt that there might have been something up there, some higher power somewhere, some sort of faith, some sort of hope. I was in Arizona and it was like 120 degrees. It was during the summertime. And all we did was sit around in the parking lot and play spades. I went to meetings and stuff, but I didn't really apply anything I learned. And I had like 30 days clean and I was living in it was like 4 bedrooms and 4 other guys. And, one of the guys had scored dope from somebody around the corner and had the dope and they were going to do it. And after having 30 days clean, I was like, fuck this bullshit. I'm going to go get high, And I remember my wife called and she was complaining that, first of all, the wreckage of my past that I left her, with a crashed car, a daughter at home, no salary, $65,000 in debt. She's a saint for dealing with that. But she called me and she said, the police station said that they don't have your phone and she wanted to go pick up my phone for something that she needed in. And they said it's at the DA's office, so I have to go downtown. And now I went downtown and it's uptown, yada, yada, yada. I said, give me the telephone number of the police station. I am going to call them. In the back of my mind, I'm going to get high. I said, let me call. I told my friends to wait. I'm going to call these people and I'm going to lay into them really hard and get this resolved, because that's the way I used to resolve things. So I remember I called and some lady was really bitchy on the phone. She was like the station manager or whatever it was. I said, oh, you're supposed to have my phone. My wife is supposed to pick it up, blah, 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 blah. And I'm screaming at her and yelling at her. And she's like, what's your name, sir? And I was like, oh, Greg, blah, blah, blah. San Severino, yada, yada, yada. Now it's perfect. I'm sorry. She's like, yeah, I don't see any records of it here. And I was getting infuriated. And I said, well, you know, here's my social security number. You have to look up this file. My wife has my phone. She goes, oh, Greg. Yeah, I'm not going to say my last name. Oh, here's your file. Put it to the side. We've been praying for you. Is literally what she said to me. And I had chills go down my arm when she said that. We've been praying for you. And I was like, you know, she probably said that to everybody who called, to be honest with you. But for some reason, it resonated with me. You know, here I was about to go get high. And now somebody's praying for me. So I remember I hung up the phone and I didn't get high that day and I remained clean. You know, my friends went about their way and who knows where they are now, you know, quote unquote friends, right? But one of those coincidences, I guess, in hindsight was a spark, you know, that I started to notice, that there is a higher power, that there is faith in something else. I'm going to talk about another instance that happened in my life. I started working for, FedEx when I got clean. And I'll go into that in the third step a little bit when I talk about handing it over to the power of God. But about a year and a half into the job, I was getting really comfortable, with my recovery. I got the job about 6 months into recovery. And I was delivering packages, whatever. I was getting really comfortable with the job. I mean, not with the job, with my recovery. I really had stopped going to meetings. I hadn't been to a meeting in like 2 weeks. My sponsor, I had changed sponsors like 2 times. I wasn't really taking it seriously because I thought I had recovery under my belt. And I remember it was late. It was a last pickup, 7 o'clock. It was freezing outside. And a friend of mine texted, I was supposed to go to a meeting that night. A friend of mine texted me, oh, we're going to play basketball. And I said, sure, I'll go for basketball. I don't need to go to a meeting. And I remember I went to this person's house. There was a big mansion up in Garden City with a big circular driveway. The driveway was covered with ice. And I was hurrying up because I wanted to get the job done and leave. And I slipped. And when I fell down, I turned my hip and I cracked my entire hip. And I was laying there on the ice, a sheet of ice, for a good 15 minutes before an ambulance came. Now, I remember looking up to the sky and I was like, you motherfucker. You know, I was like, what are you doing to me now? In hindsight, he was slowing me down. He was focusing me back on my recovery. He was, God knows if I didn't slip on that ice, I might have never went to another meeting again. But that gave me a chance to sit at home for 3 months and reconnect with my recovery. And that was my higher power working in my life. I remember laying on the ice and they had to do reconstructive surgery on my hip or whatever, everything like that. And when I got out, when I was laying on the ice, I remember looking up in the sky and there was a certain calmness that came over me. Because I knew it was some sort of weird sign. It was very bizarre. Old Greg, an active addiction Greg, would have been like, yes, I'm getting pills. You know, I'm going to sue this motherfucker and get as much money as possible. And all that comes along with, you know, that thinking and the self-centeredness. So yeah, I went and I had the surgery and people came to my house and NA showed up for me. And we had a meeting at my house and I reached out to people who went through surgery, and said, how did you deal with it without the pain pills? And I got through it. You know, the first couple of days I remember taking the pills as prescribed and literally within 2 or 3 days, I was calling my wife at work. I was like, where'd you hide those pills? And my disease was just right there again. And I said, just throw them out. This is ridiculous. I'm not going to go back down that path. It's crazy. Absolutely insane. So these coincidences started happening in my life. And when you remove your ego from the program and you get the drugs out of your life, you could really see a higher power and start to have faith working in your life. On to the third step. You know, we made a decision. This is one of my favorite steps. I haven't done the other steps, but I love this step because I almost try to practice it every day in almost all of my affairs. We made a decision to turn our life over to a higher power. And, you know, when I'll go back to working at FedEx, when I got clean, I wanted to go back to those glorious jobs. My resume looked like Swiss cheese, so nobody was hiring me. But I wanted to go back to those jobs, making six figures and doing, just jump right back in. And don't worry, I can handle not doing the drugs. And I'll manage my money differently this time, blah, blah, blah. Apparently, God had a different plan. My higher power had a different plan for me. Because I was interviewing, getting very down on myself because nobody was hiring me. And I saw an advertisement for a FedEx part-time job. Me and my wife were $65,000 in debt. We didn't know how we were going to pay the mortgage. I had to start doing something. I had to step up. So I went and I took the job and I was literally offloading. So I was offloading packages from a truck onto a conveyor belt for the first couple of months. And I was getting down on myself. And then I was like, you know what? If this is what's meant to be, then this is what's meant to be. I'm going to work my program. I'm going to work integrity. I'm going to show up with a smile every day. And whatever God has planned for me, God has planned for me. And that's what I did for the first couple of months. And finally, I had a part-time driving job. And then, you know, I continued to what to do. I left it in God's hand. I showed up. I kept my side of the street clean. And, you know, then I got a full-time job, make a little bit more money. I was like, oh, this isn't too bad. You know, I'm driving a truck, big deal. And then I started talking to the sales manager in global markets. And I had a great resume, but the last four or five years is what they look at. And that was an absolute disaster. So I started using my program again to be friendly, to be cordial, to make myself available when, you know, she needs to have a conversation. And I applied what I learned to the program into that process as well. And she said, well, you know, nobody wants to leave this job because, you know, it's a good job. I like the job. But she said, nobody ever wants to leave. And, you know, nobody's really getting fired anytime soon. So I really don't know what to tell you. And I think like 3 weeks after that conversation, somebody actually quit the job to go back to their old job. So she called me up. She said, you want to go through the interview process and see if you can get the job? I said, absolutely. So that was almost a year ago. And now, I mean, I love my job. You know, I get to work from home and, you know, talk to people all over the country and the world and making the money that I was making when I first got involved in the sound time process. And it's just funny how things work out like that when you have faith and hope in a higher power. I see it's 1:55, so I'm going to wrap it up. You know, growing up, my parents had this ridiculous sign in their bathroom. They're very religious and Catholic. I never really understood what the sign meant until I got to recovery. And the sign said, jump and the net will appear. What the hell does that mean? Jump and the net will appear. And now that I have recovery in my life, it's exactly what the two steps are. If you believe in your higher power, he's going to appear for you. So make that jump, you know, and that net will be there for you. That's it, man. I really appreciate you guys asking me to share it today. It's been awesome to see some of your family. Brendan, welcome from Shelter Rock Alive. And Ed, thanks for letting me share, guys. Have a great day. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing, Greg.
Love you, Greg.
And it is an absolute honor and a privilege for me to introduce the next speaker, the beautiful and magnificent Jessica W, previously known as Jess G, from Frick Park Group in the East End area of Narcotics Anonymous.
After that, I'm just going to speak with my camera off.
Oh my gosh. Love you.
JK. Thank you, Kelsey. Goodness, my throat just went dry. My name's Jess. I'm an addict. Thank you, Greg, for that. That was amazing. I sort of cheated when I asked Kelsey what time. Thank you, by the way, to the committee for asking me to do this. It's always an honor, to have the opportunity to share anywhere really for Narcotics Anonymous, but this was a treat. I think the last time I spoke for your retreat was like 4 or 5 years ago. So this is great. But when I asked if I was speaking at 1:30, you might be mad at me. I'm sorry, but, I asked if I was speaking at 1:30 or 2, I was told that I could pick. So I kind of threw you under the bus and told them that I would go second. But that was because I like to hear a message before giving a message, and you did great. I actually feel like I could just sort of say like, thanks, I'm just listening, and a pass. Like that was great. That was definitely a solid message of recovery and a message about hope and faith. But apparently I don't get that option today. I have to talk. So I feel really honored to have the opportunity to talk about spiritual principles, and especially about hope and faith. My clean date, let's get that out of the way. My clean date is October 24th, 2005. So, this October will be 15 years. It's kind of crazy. This past year has been like a year of, a bunch of milestones. I graduated undergrad. I started law school. I will have been married for 5 years, and I will hopefully celebrate 15 years clean. It's like all of these like milestones, and we are all like quarantined in our homes. Like I don't get to like actually physically celebrate any of these things with anybody. So it's like kind of bittersweet, you know, that kind of sucks. There's like a little bit of suckiness to that. I didn't get to like walk, for my graduation. That kind of blew. But I've been through a lot of things in recovery, that were much less cool. Like much less cool than that. So I have to look at the last year and just sort of like sit back and like have a little bit of humor and a little bit of perspective in that, like, goddamn girl, like this has been fucking amazing. You know, like I'm sitting here, like I'm sitting on a Zoom call. I get to kind of like experience this sort of amazing twist that like we're addicts and like we're going to get ours. Like the world shut down. We don't get to go to meetings. We're like, fuck y'all. We're going to figure this out. We're still doing this. Like whatever you guys are about, be about it, but we're still going to do this. So, I like that. I like that I get to be a part of recovery 2.0, 2.0, which is the way I'm calling 2020. Get to witness this. So I kind of like look at this stuff with like a perspective of like humor, and like sometimes that's the way I look at like hope and faith is like, cause like when I came in here, my perspective on things was often very dire. My perspective on things was often very chaotic and very, very Charlie Brown, very like that fucking football is going to get picked up again. Like every single time I try to kick the football, I'm sorry, I have a terrible mouth. I have a horrible mouth. You guys are just going to have to deal with it. Like every time I try to kick the football, that bitch picks it up every single time. Like, and by that, I mean life. Like this has been like the course of my life. Like I had a really difficult childhood. I had, parents who couldn't quite get it right. I dealt with a lot of, neglect and abuse, and, I have like a lot of trauma from my childhood. And when it comes to like hope and faith, I didn't grow up with any relationship, any deity. That's somewhat not true. My father put me into a private school that was sort of cultish. It was very, it was a Baptist school, and it was so Baptist. It was like, I would not have put it past these people to like baptize you twice just to make sure, like that kind of like good Lord, like, sort of scary. And they were very, very pious within the church, very kick your ass outside of the church. Like, and I'm not saying that. And then put on top of that, like, I'm not all white. It was just like a bad experience. Like it was terrible. So my experiences, within religion were not, I didn't trust religion. You know, I didn't have any experiences of religious people being trustworthy. I didn't. So when I got to NA, I didn't have you know, we all go to like those first meetings at like recovery centers or, you know, if we come through, treatment or whatever, and there's always those posters on the wall that like have like the steps spelled out or whatever. I was like three, no, seven, no. Which other ones have, I'm trying to think, okay, three has God, seven has God. You know, anything that had the word God in it, I was like, no, no, hell no. You know, like anything that had the word God in it, I was like, no parts of that, I'll try the rest of them. That was as good as I was getting. You know, and thank God, that's funny, things have changed. I had a sponsor who was like, listen, just do this. Just participate. Just write what you can. We're going to go with the third step is just participating. You know, we're just going to call it, you know, participating in recovery, participating in your own recovery, taking the direction of others, you know, because thank God I have a sponsor who has like a different, definition of what a higher power is. So she was really good at helping me define what my definition eventually would become. So I didn't walk in here. I didn't walk into having a sponsor who was like, no, you absolutely have to define your higher power. She was like, let's hold off on that. Obviously that's going to be an issue for you. It's okay. We don't have to do that right away. You know, so the other part of that is that she was good about separating out two and three and like looking at two and three as like very separate concepts for me. And I desperately needed that, especially too. I was batshit crazy. So like I needed to look at the second step as like, there were two things. Okay. So I was batshit crazy and I also thought I knew everything, which was weird because like I came in here with nothing. I had been homeless for 2 years. I had like the worst trauma that, I or pretty much most of the people that I knew, had ever gone through. I had been, when I was 22, I had been, held against my will for a day and a half, and raped multiple times by multiple people. So, you know, and then I like gave up on life for, 2 years. I couldn't recover for like 2 years. And throughout those 2 years, I was arrested multiple times. I had OD'd multiple times. I just couldn't come back from it. At the end of it, I was like, this is why, like, when I look at like people who are homeless and dejected and look like they're just like, you know, the picture of like junkie, like when we look at junkie, like I think like that's who I was, you know, and like we can't ever count somebody as like out of the game, you know, cause you never know who's inside there. But, so when I came in here, I was like I was like maybe one step above rabid pretty much, you know, and, so the second step was really important for me because I had to remember that like I had to recognize powers greater than myself beyond just a higher power. I had to recognize other people. I had to recognize institutions. I had to, and like not in a bad way. Like I had to be willing to put some trust and faith into the world around me, like in a good way. I had to be willing to like take those initial steps in like a way that allowed me to participate in society. You know, because like so many of my survival skills were so deeply outdated that they were serving me so poorly. And the Living Clean book, it talks about desperation. It's like the, I want to say this right and I'm not going to, and that's okay. You guys can read the book. You'll find it. It's like the change between desperation and hope. Like there's a point at which we come in here desperate and that desperation turns into hope. And that's what had begun to happen for me. I came in here desperate and broken and I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know what I wanted out of this program. All I knew was that, if I kept using, I was going to die. I knew that, for the first time, I didn't want to die. For the first time, I wanted to survive and I didn't even know how that happened. All I knew was that there was a girl that I was in jail at the end and, there was a girl that I was locked up with. And it's really bad when there's like another inmate and they're like, girl, you need treatment. Like you probably need to like seek some help. It's like, okay, I guess when another like criminal is telling you like you're pretty bad off, maybe you're pretty bad off. So I don't know, I guess somewhere in there, and it's funny, Greg talked about like the little coincidences that were actually like the sparks. And I remember there were times when I was out there on my own and like the cars that something like almost pushed me out the door or, you know, the houses that I ran out of or, you know, random things that just kept me alive, just kept me just a little bit alive just to get me here. And I have to think that inmate, like just encouraging me to write to a program had to be one of those things. And, you know, so I did that and here I am. And, you know, and I started when I got out of treatment, life was not easy. It was the first few years and I got into a relationship. Like I went through like the first year mostly relationship free. I think I got into like one. It's so funny. Oh man. I don't know if I can talk about that without like, no, I don't think I can because I don't know that there are too many. No, I can't. Sorry. It would break somebody's anonymity and I don't think I can do that, but it had to do with, intervention. But, I got into one rehab relationship, but anyway, I got into another relationship right after rehab and, now I have a child. I have a 14-year-old child, you know, like that's how that, I mean, it happens so often for so many of us that like, I mean, women, it's, and that wasn't part of the plan. I didn't have kids. I didn't think, you know, I grew up with terrible parents who didn't give me any blueprint for like how to be a parent or how to love a child. I didn't even know how to love myself. I didn't know that I wanted to be a parent until like I was about to be a parent. And then I was like, I don't know that I want to be anything else. And so I took on this role and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And then I had this sponsor who was really tough. And she's still my sponsor. She's been my sponsor pretty much this whole time. And here's the thing about that. So I got clean, had a boyfriend, got pregnant, but I still didn't. So I was still like kind of this rabid, crazy person, you know? So like the tempo and the timber of my relationships was just as rabid and crazy. You know, I would pick people who were abusive because I didn't know any better. My kid's dad and I, the relationship was terrible. I was terrible. I was terrible in it, you know? I had to allow that second step. I had to allow myself to be humble enough to take direction in all things, in the things that were difficult and the things that were uncomfortable. And, you know, we talk about like sponsorship because that's really like the key power greater than ourselves, right? Like when we first come in here, like we talk about like a higher power and a power greater than ourselves, but like that power greater that's like really important is like a sponsor, you know, somebody who has more time than us, has work steps, hopefully is involved in service, hopefully has a higher power, who can like show us how to live clean, you know? And like, I was so clueless on what to do. I needed not only her, but I needed like other women to tell me what to do. And I needed to ask. I needed to be honest. I needed to say like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Like they, like a closed mouth doesn't get fed, right? So I needed to be honest. And then like the longer I stayed clean, I also had to open myself up to be willing to work with other women as well, you know? So that's like a whole thing. I'm starting to get a little off track because I'm starting to get nervous. So, I'm sorry. I've had to like learn whenever I speak to recognize when that happens and like take a breath. So, anyway, my process with learning to, take suggestions and grow, was more valuable in, you know, one of the things that we talked about this morning, at the end of our, cause my home group is actually Saturday mornings too. We were talking about like the cliches that happen, you know, meeting makers make it. If you ain't praying, you ain't staying. Well, the one that really, that I clued in on was, if nothing changes, nothing changes. For whatever reason, heard it early in my recovery, because I think those cliches, I think the ones that stick with us are the ones that like work for us. And there was something in me always that wanted to be better, that wanted to grow, that wanted to reach for more. I just didn't know it, you know? And I think that like we talk about recovery being recovering what was once lost. And for me, whatever was once lost was buried under trauma, buried under abuse, buried under neglect, buried under years of self-abuse, self-detriment. So much, and I never knew it. And, you know, it took years of work and recovery, years of step work, years of being involved in service, years of availing myself to newcomers to recognize, my full potential, to recognize that I wanted more. And to, you know, the way that I'm tying this into hope and faith is that, I didn't know what I could be capable of. And I would not have known what I could be capable of, if it weren't for this process, if it weren't for this program. I know that people get clean. I know that people stop using, in ways that aren't NA related. I know that that happens. I know that for me, not only did this program help me like stop using and find a different way of life, but like, I have tapped into a world of change. I have been able to grow into the person that I never knew I could ever be. So like my desk right now, and like you, I don't know if you could, so all of those books back there, this like lovely, this is like $1,700 of books for my first year in law school. So like when I came in here, I came in here on the word of literally my cellie, my cellmate at the Allegheny County Jail told me that I was such a hot mess that I needed to apply to a court ordered rehab because I was so broken, and she could see it. My cellmate, the Allegheny County Jail, because I am a criminal. I'm not a felon, but I have a criminal history that I have applied for clemency. I haven't heard yet, but I have applied for clemency. So even that, like I applied for law school, my application, I had to send in, like a statement, like a, what the hell do you call those things? A personal statement. My personal statement was basically basically gave them my lead. I was like, this is who I am, just so you know what you're getting involved in. this was how the law played into all of this, and this is what I plan to do with it. And these people let me in anyway. So they know who I am. They know what I'm doing. Back to like the third step and back to my relationship with a higher power. I didn't come in here with some budding romance relationship with a higher power. That never happened for me. It never became any budding relationship with a higher power. When my sponsor sat me down after working the 10th step, and we looked at the 11th step, she simply said, your higher power can be anything you want it to be. And I swear, my heart, I felt like the Grinch. I felt like my heart grew 3 sizes. I was like, it literally, it broke open. Like, I think tears just started rolling down my face because I think that I had always known. I think I had always known that, like, I had a connection. I think I had always felt like I was in the care of. I think that the evidence was always there. And I, too, it took me, like, 7 or 8 years to work all 12 steps. So our process is our process. And, listen, I felt super, like, okay with my process because I felt the change. I felt the internal change from my process. But my relationship with my higher power, which is still super, like, it evolves and it changes and flexes and it is what it is. But what I do know is that it is current and it is constant and it is very conscious. I have a very conscious contact with my higher power. My feeling of faith, my definition of faith, the way that I think of faith, it just feels like anything is possible. You know, I feel like as long I mean, part of it is evidence based, you know, so it's funny, like faith is belief in things unseen, you know, and we're addicts. So for us, it's like we want a taste of the bag. But, you know, I have had enough evidence that to ignore the evidence would just be silly. But I want such big things for myself, such big things. I mean, I've become a good mom. How did that happen? I don't have that evidence for that. I've just tried. I've just put in the work. I'm a good sponsor, you know? So, I don't know. I'm grateful for, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to have the opportunity to share a little bit of my story with you guys. That's it. Thanks.